Sundance Farms near Coolidge. And I'll let you tell me your name.
I'm Wilbur Wirtz.
Okay. And tell me, when and where were you born?
I was born in Pierrepont, South Dakota, 1923.
And what brought you to Arizona?
Well, the folks came and I came with them.
Are you old enough to remember the trip?
Oh, yeah.
What do you remember?
Yeah. Well, we came in an old Buick car with wooden wheels. And if you know, wooden wheels got to be kept wet or they dry out and they break. So the four wheels, four boys. So each one of us had a responsibility of keeping that our wheel wet down. Howard didn't keep his wet down. We broke down outside of Coolidge. We've been here ever since.
It's Howard's fault.
Yeah. But we're glad because Coolidge's been good to us.
And what year was that when you came here?
1929.
What did you think when you first settled here in Coolidge?
Oh, I don't know. I enjoyed it because we were kids, you know. We didn't know. And it was fun. It was, of course, October wasn't hot. So we had plenty of things to do.
What kind of things did you have to do in 1929 in Coolidge?
Oh, gosh. Of course, went to school, obviously, you know, and but then there was plenty of things to do, and on a farm, you darn sure helped. So all of us got out and worked.
What were some of your chores on the farm?
Oh, well, gosh, chopping weeds and milking cows and feeding cows. And of course, early, like Howard said, we tried farming with horses, and that didn't work. It was just too hot for them, and Dad soon got a tractor. So it went along, we learned how to drive the tractor even. But do all kinds of things on the farm, and there's plenty to do. And certainly with the cows to milk and all those things, we darn sure had plenty to do.
And you mentioned going to school. What were schools like here?
Oh, they were, oh, by the time, let's see, I guess the first school I went to probably was Borey Corner, but then it went along and they had school in Coolidge. Obviously they were reasonably good because we learned enough to get by and get on to even make it in college, so obviously was reasonable.
How did you get to, from here to Coolidge to go to school?
Oh, a lot of course they had buses, but then all of us wanted to play athletics, so of course the bus had already gone by the time we got through practicing, so a lot of times we'd have to walk home. That was quite a, that keep you in shape though.
How far was it?
Oh, what, 5 miles, Howard?
Yes.
Something like that.
How big a school was it in Coolidge?
Oh gosh, it was small, I don't know. I think my high school graduating class was 35, I think, somewhere in that neighborhood.
When did you graduate from high school?
1941. Went down to, in 42, of course, went to County University, and then of course, Pearl Harbor came, went off to that war.
So you went to U of A?
Yeah, I started at U of A, yeah. And then, of course, after the war, I had the good sense to get out of the Air Force and go back to school. That was a good decision.
Tell me a little bit about the war years.
Well, I was a, I was a pilot. I went into the Air Force and went through the cadet training program in several places, and then when I graduated in Twin Engine out in Stockton, commander called me in and said, well, we're going to send you down to learn how to fly instruments. So I went down to Texas A&M or Bryan, Texas Air Force's Instrument School, learned how to fly instruments, and went back and from several, well, quite a while, taught instruments. And then we didn't lose as many pilots as they had expected, and so they started training, you know, closing the training schools down, and then they sent me to B-17 school, and then finally B-29 school. Then they dropped those big ones, and the war was over, and we got out.
Did you ever fly and serve overseas?
No, I was an instructor here, never got out of the States.
But you flew that B-29.
Yep. Incredible. But didn't have, oh yeah. It was big enough to carry that big one.
So when you came back from the war, then what did you do?
back to school. Well, we farmed a little bit, but then went back to school. And then when I graduated down the university in, I guess, 1949, I went to work for the university. I was a county agent in Yuma County for a little while, and in Maricopa County. And then...
what was your major in school?
Animal husbandry.
Were you down at the Aggie House?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I borrowed $2,500 in 1945 or 46 and made a down payment on the Aggie House. And it's paid for now, isn't it, Howard?
That's right.
Now it's paid for. Yeah, I went down.
Now, I'm going to stop here just for a second because...
But then, of course, we had closed up during the war, and then we came back. Why? Several of us got it going again. I remember borrowing money from the Valley Bank, making a down payment on it. And it's still going.
Still agriculture down there.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's some Robies still going to school down
oh,
there.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't for Robies there. I don't think Aggie House would make it. Yeah, I guess we got the one Wirtz down there now, but after that, I don't know. It's going to be a long time before we get any more in. But Robies are a lot. They're there.
There's a lot of Robies.
Yep, lots of Robies.
Well, tell me a little bit about, you know, you say after you graduated, you were a county agent?
Yeah, in Yuma County and then in Maricopa County. And then about that time, University of Arizona had developed some Acala cotton varieties. And then the Department of Agriculture had, well, they had, they at Sacaton, they did the breeding work for Pima cotton. But about that time, a guy named Dr. Bryan down at the University of Arizona, he wasn't his responsibility, extra long staple cotton, but he just had a fascination for it. And he crossed some things that nobody else thought about doing, came up with Pima S1, a new variety of Pima cotton that really produced and had reasonable quality. So that seed needed to be reproduced and available to the farmers. So they set up what they called, they copied California, the Arizona Cotton Seed Distributors. And I became the first manager and did that for, I don't know, 6 or 7 years. Then finally, of course, decided that I wanted to farm. And by that time, Howard had gotten started farming, and we had a lake place down there and got my brother Vern going, and then Howard took it and got him going, and they were nice enough to let me have it, and I'm still farming it, kind of.
Where is it that you're farming?
Down by the Picacho Lake, just north of the Picacho Lake.
How far is that from here?
Oh, what's 6-7 miles, just south of Coolidge. By the Picacho Reservoir.
What do you farm down there?
Oh, cotton, mostly alfalfa. With all the dairies around here now, alfalfa's our biggest crop. But I don't do much of the work, I just kind of fuss at them.
You've seen a lot of changes in farming, I imagine, since the horses that your dad had. You want to talk a little about how it's changed?
Well, just, you know, gosh, so many changes. First tractors, and I remember, of course, we didn't have enough money to buy the equipment to go on the tractor, so Dad had cut the tongues off and hook it on the tractor, so it would take a tractor driver and another guy on the mower or cultivator or whatever. But of course, it wasn't too long till you got equipment that mounted on the tractors. And now, gosh, all kinds of things, you know, drip irrigation at Howard pioneered, and laser levelers, and GPSs, and modified, just, you know, whoever, somebody put that bacillus gene in cotton so the worms won't eat it anymore. Just amazing, the things that have happened, well, not just in agriculture, but society as a whole.
Well, I know the machinery for picking cotton has sure changed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the first picker we got was 1949 or 50. I think still did a little bit of hand picking, 49 or 50, but then, of course, those machines now are efficient. But you know, one of the interesting things about how little things make a big difference, they tried that cotton picker and tried it and tried it, didn't really work very well, to finally somebody, and I don't remember who it was, I'm not sure I ever knew, but it said, hey, you need to put a little water on that spindle. Made all the difference in the world, you know, it made cotton pickers work efficient. But just a simple idea, but somebody needed to think of it. Now it works. I don't know, cotton picking machines are amazing, amazing machine.
Of course, that makes farming a lot more expensive too. You gotta buy all that
thing. Oh, I know, but then look what it'll do. I don't know what 1 6-year-old picker hower will do as much as 6,000 Chinese, something like that. I don't know how many, but just, you know, it's just a remarkable. And of course, in China, you know, they still pick it by hand, but not us.
You got more Chinese in China.
Yeah, they do. That's right.
I forgot to ask you that Howard said you had a story about how your parents happened to come to Coolidge that's different from his version.
Well, I think I told you about the wooden wheels.
Yeah.
Well, that, you know, the car we had, I think I already told you about the wooden wheels and having to keep them wet. Mm-hmm. Howard didn't keep his wet, broke down. We've been here ever since.
Oh, okay. That's the version. Oh, okay. I think it was Howard's fault.
Yeah. And we're glad. Because Cooley's been good to us.
Well, tell me a little bit about how you've gotten involved with the water district. I guess you weren't as involved with, or you got involved somewhat with the Central.
Well, the local district. That, you know, like Howard said, the CAWCD that he was, they contracted with the district. So our district here, our local district, the whole Kam Irrigation District, and three of us, I've been on the electrical district that provides power for us, with the pump water. Electrical District number 2 was formed 1923. And now I've been on that district board now for 40 years, I guess. But anyway, out of the electrical district, we knew we needed an irrigation district because electrical districts can just handle electricity. And obviously, we needed to handle water. So three of us that were on that district formed the whole Kam Irrigation District. And it's the one now that delivers water to us.
And, so you were actually part of forming that?
Yeah.
When did you do that?
Oh gosh, in the early 70s, I don't remember exactly, but.
Was it specifically to work with the CAWCD?
Oh yeah, you had to have, you got to have a, CAWCD had to contract with districts, and we had to form one to make, you know, to have a contract with them, and then we had to build the canals and all the systems to deliver it, so we formed it sometime in the 70s, I can't
What's
remember.
Involved in forming an irrigation
Oh, just lawyers. But there's rules, you know, you just got to go through and get enough people. In our case, we didn't just go draw a big circle and say all of you that are in here are part of the district. We just advertised and told people who wanted, anybody that wanted to get into the district, come and sign up. And the Soil Conservation Service in Coolidge helped a whole bunch. They provided enough, so people went in and so we did it by invitation, and then later on a few people petitioned out, but we had enough acres, I don't know what, 25,000 acres or so. So formed a district and contracts to get the water and build the canals and hire the people to run it. The guy we hired to run Ho-O-Kam, he's still with us. We hired a good one.
How many people does it take to run that district?
Oh gosh, I don't know what we have. Probably 5 or 6. Not doesn't take too many. Somebody to turn it, open the gates, and close the gates, and do the billing. And of course, the district can levy taxes to help pay for have that authority.
That probably doesn't make you too popular.
Oh no, but then you know the. We farmed, we wanted water, and that's the only way you're going to get it. You can't contract individually. You got to have an organization to go do that, and we haven't had any much. Don't say some people didn't fuss a little bit about it, but primarily no, because they wanted the water.
When did you first start getting the water down here?
Gosh, I don't remember for sure. Sometime, what, Howard, 70s? Sometime, I don't remember. We've had it for a long time now. I remember out there, and we got opened up that connection to CAP and had the water flow down. I've got some pictures of it, but I don't remember the exact date. When you get as old as me, you'll have senior moments. I'll remember everything.
Well, tell me a little bit about the electric power.
Well, we, you know, of course, back then, 1923, when ED2 was formed, we needed power to run our pumps. And so a guy named Tony Van Wagenen, he was the attorney for the city of Casa Grande. Farmers didn't have any money, that they went and said, Tony, we need to form a district because we need to get power. And I said, you know, we can't afford to pay you now, but you get it set up and sell bonds and so we can build the lines and stuff, and then we'll pay you. So he did. He formed a district, called it ED1, but the court found something wrong. He had to go get a superior court to say it's okay. But something was wrong, and he corrected whatever they wanted him to correct, and so there wouldn't be any tie-up or anything. He called it ED2. That's why we electrical district number 2, and we furnish power. And it's interesting now. We furnish power for more houses than we do farms as things have grown, and it's going to be more and more and more. Because like Howard here, I guess you're going to use ED2 power, aren't you, Howard?
Yeah.
So, you know, just that one deal. So for agriculture, it's, well.
So it started out with like the rural electrification?
Well, no, we were before them. So the rural electrics didn't come until Roosevelt in the mid-30s. So we were way before that, 1923, that formed. And we copied California, obviously, they had electrical districts in the San Joaquin and I probably Sacramento Valley. But anyway, the attorney, I could say, he got the copy of some how they did it in California and formed our district. And then we begin to, of course, we get power out of Hoover, hydropower. And of course now, we got to buy power a lot of places.
Originally you got power from
Hoover. Yeah, yeah. And still, that's our big, you know, that's our base. And then we buy from Palo Verde and a lot of other places.
How did the role, you know, you're just talking about how that role of that electrical district has changed then over the years from being just for the farms and...
Well, we furnish now power for a lot of people. And the law says that, in fact, we had a lawsuit with APS because we started serving other loads other than irrigation pumping. And the court finally said that we could serve. And so we serve a lot of other besides just irrigation.
There's been a lot of talk in recent years about the deregulation of the power business. How does that affect a small district like yours in the rural?
Oh, it hadn't. They found out that deregulation wasn't all that good. And thank goodness we learned a little from California, and Arizona didn't do all that. So ours still works. Of course, we got Salt River Project. You know, they're one of the biggest districts, and they've been a good example for all of us to follow.
I heard some of the irrigation districts have had problems with financially and happened to declare bankruptcy and things like that.
Oh, I guess. Well, yeah, I guess some of them have. Certainly we haven't. And, ED2, Salt River ran ED2 from 1923 until 1945. And, of course, we got the power. In fact, we had 25-cycle power because Roosevelt's generators at Roosevelt were 25-cycle. Do you know what I mean, 25-cycle? You do! I'm impressed.
One of the roomies explained it to me.
Oh, did he? Okay. Well, I'm impressed. Anyway, the generator's up there. They weren't changed until after World War II. And they switched them. Yeah, the Robies wouldn't know.
Why don't you explain it to me so that it'd be on this tape? So
oh, well, it's just a cycle. We got alternating current, and when it was 25 cycle, it alternated 25 times, and now with 60 cycle, it does 60 times, so you can't tell it, really. But when we had old 20, yeah, you could see those things flicker.
That's what he explained to me.
Yeah, see? So you say, we're telling the truth, huh?
I guess your story's a match.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's
the case.
Yeah, you certainly could.
Well, you you wouldn't want to shoot film. And when I first started shooting film, you'd get a 25 cycle and your picture would...
Oh, would it?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know.
It could, in other words, sometimes it would, depending on when you started the camera.
Oh, really?
Or it, you know, you never knew. And you couldn't see it in the viewfinder.
I never heard that before.
Oh, yeah.
See, I told you, come out here, I'd learn something. Well, that had to be aggravating, didn't
it? It was very aggravating. Now, when we went to video, it doesn't affect video.
Oh, it doesn't.
But film, because it did. Ran at 24.
Oh, I see.
Just a little off.
Oh, be darned. Interesting.
Yeah. The things you learn during these
You bet.
Talk a little bit about how the economy of farming. Farming's a business. It's not just something you do for a hobby. How has that changed over the years?
Well, it just... You know, farms had to get larger because of, like you say, a cotton picker costing several hundred thousand dollars and a combine and just pumps and stuff. So you had to have a reasonably sized farm. And of course, that meant lots of finances. You had to borrow money or, you know, all those things. So certainly a business, like you say. And nice to know about how to grow crops and but again, how to market them. And of course, we joined co-ops and to help market. Like, we belong to Calcott, the markets our cotton. And so we can do things together that we couldn't do individually, which includes irrigation districts and electrical districts and co-ops and lots of, even government, huh?
It seems like you think of farmers as kind of just being out here, like you say, on the farm, out here raising crops, but most of you are actually real involved on boards and in the community.
You bet, lots of us are. And now it's part of our heritage is that you become a participant and help make things go. So all of us have done that.
Did you ever get involved more with the CAP like your brother?
No, except for farming the local. You know, I just encouraged them all I could, but I never was actually involved other than, but then, like I say, forming HOCAM to contract and build a system and certainly involved in that.
So how did you become involved in city politics then?
Well, our previous mayor is our local grocer, Tom Shope, and he had done it for 8 years, and he called me and said, Wilbur, I'm not going to do it anymore, but, you know, you've been in Coolidge a long time, and you ought to do that. So I ran and won the first time and haven't had an opponent since, so I'm going to do it 2 more years, and then I'll be 83 by then. I think 8 years, that's plenty, so I'm going to quit. But it's been interesting.
You know, it's on the tape.
Yeah.
He's gonna quit.
I'm going to. I'm Gilbert Lopez, our vice mayor. He's been on for a long time, been vice mayor, and he wants to do it, and I'm going to get out of his way.
I think at 83.
You bet. You bet.
Retire.
Yeah.
Talk That's a little bit about how the city of Coolidge has how you've seen it change since you came here in 1929.
Oh gosh. Well, there wasn't any Coolidge when we came. The only thing that I can remember Foxworth Gilbert, the lumber company, was here because they knew the dam had been completed, and they knew a guy named Jones had laid out a site, Coolidge. And of course, they knew that Coolidge was going to grow, so Foxworth had a lumber yard, you know, and they did. They furnished materials for Coolidge to grow. But it started out slow. Well, we're still, you know, we're an agricultural town. And one of the things that really hurts us is that you get taxes from industry. And we just got one little industrial, we got an industrial park, but only one. And we're trying to increase that. But again, the advantages we don't have, we don't have the main railroad. We're further away from 8 and 10, the Casa Grande and Eloy. You know, are so we're an ag town, and now people are coming, and they're coming because land is relatively cheap in Coolidge, and that's why we're now finally they've run out of land everywhere else, and ours is cheap, and they're coming.
So your tax base then is?
Ag. Well, in houses, but not, you know, our our budget gets squeezed because, boy, we got industry. You know, the property tax and then the sales taxes and things. Sales taxes are our big, and Walmart helped us on that. A lot of people fussed about Walmart, but again, you can go buy a pair of Levi's in Coolidge now.
I didn't realize you had a Walmart.
Yeah, we do. Mm-hmm.
So that was a big thing, I would think.
Well, yeah, because, yeah. And the taxes, the sales taxes, is how cities live.
Yeah, because like any city, you have to have certain services.
Oh, man, that's right. Police, streets.
You have crime in Coolidge?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, you know, I guess every city, but dope, you know, marijuana and other things. Kids, I don't know. I don't understand that, but darn sure there, and a big problem.
Well, did you ever think when you probably as a kid when you moved here, you didn't think about it, but did you ever see that Arizona grow like it has?
Not really. Of course, again, you know, we got good climate, water now, and gosh, yeah, those places out in the Northeast this year, they had that tough winter. People don't want to do that. And then what, Buffalo, New York has snow, and so it's a nice place to live. And obviously, people are coming. And I think even, you know, California, we're even getting a lot of Californians. But there's, what, 35 million people in California now, so we're going to get some of them. I hope we can keep it. I just hope we can keep it so it's still nice.
Put a gate.
What do you see as the biggest challenges for the state in the future?
Oh, I guess just seeing after growth in a reasonable way that we don't mess it up. You know, we can keep a decent lifestyle and not pollute. And I think we're probably a little more fortunate in this county than maybe Maricopa County because we get some winds that kind of clean it out for us here. Where I think you get, what, inversion layers and stuff in Phoenix where you need a rain or a, but you don't get the winds to clean things out like we do. So we're fortunate in that.
You get some of the summer rains here, like they do.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, they Tucson gets them first, but we get them.
What about water? How do you see the future for water here?
Well, it's thank God we got that CAP. Without it, we were pumping and we were depleting it. I don't know whether you noticed, but if you go through Coolidge, the mesquite trees around the Cascan Ruins, you probably have known, they're dead, aren't they?
They're gone.
You know why? We pumped the water down. Well, a mesquite tree can go roughly 30 feet for water, but we farmers pumped it down below that, and except where they've been irrigated or in a wash or along the bar pits, those mesquite trees out there around that Cascan Ruins are died.
Sometimes from the air you can see ground shifts and.
Oh yeah, well we pumped the water out. You bet you're going to get some subsidence and you're going to have some cracks, and we've got them. However, since CAP, thank God for CAP. You know, since we farmers quit pumping so much and started putting on CAP water, why that water table has, oh, it's even come up a little. Now with the river down and we're pumping more, I hope we don't overdo it. I hope and pray it rains this winter and in the Colorado and Gila. So if you got any connections to the, well, whoever controls that, talk to them. Oh, sure, and yeah, oh, yeah, we've seen the dam, Coolidge Dam up there run over, and we've seen the Gila flood. But then there's more dry years. You know what Will Rogers said about Coolidge Dam? He says, mine, I'd mow it. Yeah, he came out here in about 1935, I guess, to dedicate that. He said, mine, I'd mow it. So that's kind of how it is.
Not too much water that year.
Well, that the Gila watershed is just not a very productive watershed. The Salt and Verde, you know, they're a lot better watershed. Because over in New Mexico, it just, there are times when it really rains, but then, by and large, it's not a very good watershed.
Now, was that dam? Why did they build a dam there?
Well, because, well, I guess Presbyterian Church was one of the big factors involved, because they had a, what they call the Cook Christian Training Mission out at Sacaton, but of course, with no dam, you know, the water, in wintertime, rain, and water come down the Gila and go out, dump into the Colorado, and by the time July and June, July and August, when we needed it, and the Indians needed it, it was gone. So they lobbied Congress to get Coolidge Dam built. In fact, I think it's the only dam that the Bureau of Indian Affairs built, not Bureau of Reclamation, and of course they still operate it. But half the water was to go to the Pima Indians and the other half to white farmers. It was a combination deal. But it was certainly glad they got that dam.
But it was designed to be for irrigation primarily?
Well, fine. And of course they had generators, they thought, but there wasn't enough water consistent enough, and I don't think the generators work anymore. I think they've just decided that they can get power other places and they don't.
So it was always like that. I know in recent years, last 20 years or so, it's been pretty dry.
Oh, yeah, but then there have been years when it run over. What, 91, I think, was, wasn't it 91
yeah,
when it flooded?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So.
Now, it had a crack in it. Has that been repaired?
Yeah, they fixed that. Yeah, safety of dams deal, you know, they, thank God, they fixed that.
Yeah. And even the Gila was flooding and washed out at interstate.
Yeah.
Do
yeah.
You remember those?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's one of the reasons, the Painted Rock is down there now.
Did that those floods affect your farming here?
No, not me. Some of them along the river, but not us. We're far enough inland, higher.
Well, how do you see the future of farming in Arizona?
Oh, it's going to change, like, you know, Howard here selling his place for a master planned community, but he'll still farm for a long time. And I think in our electrical district, our manager told me the other day we had 9 dairies in our electrical district. 9 dairies. So obviously they're being pushed out of Maricopa County and they're coming down here. And as we fill up, they'll probably go, I don't know, south to Eloy and maybe to Wilcox, I don't know where, but right now we got them. And we got to grow a lot of alfalfa. That's why I grow more alfalfa than I do cotton. Because those dairies, those cows, they need feed. And they need a lot of alfalfa. So, but alfalfa takes lots of water. So that's people talk about where we're going to get all the water for houses. Well, you know, we farm like an acre of alfalfa, I'll put on at least 8 acre feet. And an acre of houses uses less than 2 acre feet. So houses use a lot less water than farmers, unless you're on drip.
People don't realize that.
Oh, no, they don't. And, we need to keep telling the story. People realize, you know, they just open their mouths when you tell them that. They don't. Well, why would they know? They wouldn't know, you know. So.
Can you use drip on alfalfa?
Oh, you could, I guess. I don't know. We don't. We haven't. You got to be rich to have drip. But maybe that's why I got rich. I don't know. Which came first?
What advice do you have for young people today that are looking into what to do with their lives and choosing careers and things?
Well, certainly, of course, I like agriculture, you know, but there's so many fields in agriculture now. Gosh, I don't know, you know. lots of different fields. So, gosh, marketing and development and all kinds of things. Because one thing I'm sure of, people are not going to quit eating or wearing clothes. So I'm sure agriculture is here to stay.
Are you still involved with the College of Agriculture down here?
Oh, yes.
How? Yeah.
Oh, just I'm on several of their committees, to help promote it.
Are you involved with some of the students down there, too? Or?
No, I'm not right now.
Did your children, did they go to the...
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we wouldn't finance them going anywhere else. Nope. Well, my daughter Laura, she helps. She takes care of the cattle, and she helps on the farm. The other two help by spending the money. That's important too.